You are listening to the Beyond the High Road podcast with Shelby Milford, episode number 82. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Beyond the High Road, a podcast dedicated to healing your heart and life following the grief of alienation.
Hey, y'all, really quick, I just wanted to make the announcement. Don't forget to sign up. I'll leave the link down below, but it's beyondthehighroad.com//, I forget, I never know what to say there, neutralize my pain. And so the N, the M, and the P in that, each word is capitalized in the slug. Okay, it's April 27th, which is this Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. Okay, see you there. And so it's going to be about turning your pain into purpose. Oh, and also, I'm going to forego this week's Facebook Live, like we're going to do the live event on Saturday in lieu of the weekly Facebook Live. So you have to sign up to this event in order to get the Zoom link, okay? All right, I'm going to get on to the episode. Hey, guys, this is my third time of recording this episode today because it's just been a little hectic today. So hopefully third time's a charm. I want to just talk with you guys today about a theme that I've noticed over this last week. These are common challenges that we as target parents of alienation face. I've noticed a lot of people talking about reunification therapy it's so common. We see this all the time, how it's a scam and it's not working and the courts or just want to take your money. There was that. And then I was noticing parents who were sort of frozen, not making decisions because of their overwhelming fear of a possible outcome. And so that's really where this came from. And I'm going to start with the first example, which is a former client of mine. He finished his sessions. We finished our time together just pretty recently. But while he was with me, he had been going back to court. He hadn't seen his youngest son in years. No contact at all. The mom had a protective order for a while there. So they'd finally just gone to court and gotten ordered reunification therapy and parenting time for dad, right? Which was a big yay. This is all he was looking forward to from the time that he hired me was, when we get there, when we hopefully the judge orders this and yada, 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 everything will be fine and dandy. And I think we've all been through this, right? We look to something, if this happens, then blah, blah, blah. And we do this in the hopeful way. And we do this also in the shitty way. Like, what if, dun, 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 right? But we look to what might happen ahead and put all of our eggs in that basket. If you guys have watched or listened to the Hope episode, this is the one that would pair well with it. It's that idealistic, everything will be great when that thing up there happens. And then we get to up there, and up there presents its own set of challenges. And then it's always, well, maybe it'll be up there. And so we're constantly on this chase, right? The goalposts keep moving. And we do that to ourselves. So this is all he wanted was for reunification therapy and his parenting time to be ordered. And he got here, and now there is a new set of challenges that he's presented with. And that is that his child has been coerced by the alienating parent. His child has just recently voiced that he wants things to go back to how they were before the court order was put in place, that he was only being made to show up to the parenting time. He's 11 years old. And that he prefers the other way. And so as we do, I think, you know, I was just mentioning this last week, as alienated parents, the one thing that we share is that we all crave and really desire to be that source of grounding for our children, right? We know how much they've gone through and are going through. And so really, we don't want to make any waves. We really just want to support them as best as we can, even to the point where we will eliminate ourselves from the equation if that means peace for our children. I get where he's coming from. So there's the aspect of reunification therapy that he had going on. He felt like he was just paying out $450, $500 a session to this therapist that wasn't helping. And so there was that. And then also his child and him exercising his parenting time. Okay. So I'm going to split those up. I think so many of us have either both or one of these things going on that it deserves the specifics. So y'all know that I do not hand out advice really about anything, but especially about what you choose to do pertaining to your relationship with your child, right? Like whether you're continuing on, if you are fighting the good fight, dripping love, or if you are actively trying to advocate for your child in court, or you're not speaking to your child at all. Regardless, my role here is to always help you, to support you in you healing yourself. I still hold that true. And I think how you look at and the expectations that you put upon all of these choices that you will make regarding your relationship with your child and what you're doing, what you're not doing, really does all contribute to your own mental health and your healing process, right? So here's what I think about reunification therapy. Are you ready? And I saw like posts this week, three or four of them, Facebook posts. I think they were all Facebook posts. Reunification therapy is crap. It's a scam. It's this, it's that. It's the court. They all just want your money and blah. It doesn't work. Well, I do not feel that way. I truly believe that reunification therapy can be an amazing resource. I think that it can assist parents and children in opening up those pathways of connection again. Absolutely 100%. Now, there are obviously going to be exceptions to that. And also, I think first and foremost, it's very important to get clear with yourself about what your expectations are for the end, like the last session of reunification therapy. What are you expecting in your mind? Are you expecting for everything to go right back to how it was? Hunky-dory, like alienation never happened. We're closer than ever and we're arm in arm wherever we go, right? If that's what you're expecting, I mean, let's face it, the title of this therapy is a little bit misleading. It's suggesting that at the end of your treatment process, that things will be back to normal. Y'all will be reunified. But it's not how it works. And the outcome of the therapy relies on so many different contributing factors during the therapy, right? Did you guys go? How many sessions did you have? What was the alienating parent doing during that time? How much were they resisting the therapy? Did they make scheduling difficult? Are they leaning on your children before therapy happens, after therapy happens? This is all going to affect how your child shows up to it, right? So there's so many different factors that are out of your hands completely that contribute to how, quote unquote, successful or not that this process is going to be. And those are just like the ones that are right off on top of my head. How open you are during the whole process, how angry you are, which is fine that you're angry, but it's like, are you going there ready to work or not? So I think labeling reunification therapy across the board as a scam or as like another way that the courts are getting you, I don't think that that's fair. However, I will say that it's my belief that reunification therapy is not successful most of the time because if it's not successful, it's because of the efforts and obsession on the alienating parent's side. That's exactly what happened with me. They were making scheduling really difficult. The times that we did have in our therapy sessions were actually really amazing. They have some really great tools and exercises to sort of open up those pathways of connection, great little memory exercises to get the kids to dig up and uncover, access the part of them that does truly love and appreciate you. Amazing exercises. Problem is if you can't get the kid there, then you're not going to have any outcome. And so if they're making it difficult for scheduling, then that's one thing. Also, how far the appointments are spaced out, this makes a huge difference too, because if there's too much space in between them, then the kid's going to go right back to where they were in too little space and it's overwhelming. You know, yes, the appointments are expensive. No, not all therapists are worth the amount that they charge. I truly believe that there are some therapists out there that don't know what the fuck they're doing. I do. And I also believe more times than not, the conditions that these therapists are given are not workable. Therapists are not sorcerers, right? They're not superhuman. If you are dealing with an obsessed, alienating parent, then they will sabotage any sort of progress they see happening. That's where we run into the problems. Therapists cannot fix for that. They cannot control the other parent. They can do whatever possible in creating the best and most safe feeling atmosphere for your child to open up and access the parts of them that they've had under lock and key as a result of the loyalty conflict that they've been faced with. So there's a safe space that they are able to show love to you, but they cannot make the alienating parent change. So that's really when the reunification therapy fails. Also, too, my daughter was showing up and accusing the therapist of being on my side as if there were sides. And then I was like, oh, I see how we're going here. And so this is something that can happen, of course. And I think this is a very common occurrence during the process. If they're starting to make progress, then it is true that I think the kid will feel conflicted. Many times our children will rediscover the connection that they have with you and then will leave there feeling a little bit unsafe because they know that they cannot divulge their newfound, rediscovered love for you. They have to keep that separate and compartmentalized. And so that can feel scary for the children to have to step in and out of those two different worlds. Because usually if reunification therapy is happening, then obviously there's been a period of time, a disconnect, right? And so that disconnect has likely been a relief on your child, if I'm going to be frank about it. It's less cognitive dissonance. They're not having to deal with the internal war of, do I love my parent? Do I hate them? Do I love them? Do I hate them? They're just on the one track. I believe given the right therapist, there's some really great reunification therapists out there, that it can be an amazing tool that works in tandem with all of the other tools that you choose, right? So it's not, there's not one end all be all like magic alienation reverser out there. That's where I think many of us as target parents need to sort of temper our expectations, become very clear on what it is we think that each one of the resources is going to provide for us. I like to look at, with anything that I'm talking about, but especially when you're talking about your relationship, like reconnecting with your child, you have a toolbox. It's like a collaboration, placing all of our eggs in one basket and saying, well, gosh, I just hoping and praying that reunification therapy is going to stick is never going to be your answer. It's too much responsibility and power on this one thing. And there's too many factors that are involved and can affect the outcome, especially when we're talking about working with an alienated child and an alienating parent. So I cannot tell you whether reunification therapy is the smart thing for you to do. But I will say that too often, we want to look out at what could happen or what so-and-so did or what didn't work for whoever else, somebody else that they read about online. When we rely too heavily on whatever outside of us, we dull and silence our own wisdom, our own inner voice that's always telling us what to do, so long as we're opening ourselves up to hearing it. Okay. So I think it's very important for you to trust that you truly do have your own answers. But when we run into this indecision, confusion, not knowing what to do, so we feel frozen and don't make any decisions, or we make a crappy decision that we regret later, that's usually because we're coming from a place of fear. We're not having agency over ourselves and trusting that we know what's best. When we regret something, things that have happened in our past, most of the time, I was trying to think about this earlier today. anything I've regretted doing before, I have regretted only because I wasn't standing in my power at the time I made whatever decision I made to do whatever it is I did. The things that I regret doing all came from me acting from a place of fear or trying to protect myself or my daughter at the time, and ended up not thinking clearly at the time. When we're in fear, when we're trying to like avoid and go, circumvent and go around, we're rarely thinking clearly. We're thinking with our emergency brain, which shuts down the critical thinking. I see so many of us that don't know what to do. We end up frozen in indecision and confusion. There was a post that I was reading earlier today on Facebook that is like, I just worry about what the judge might think about what my kid could say to the judge in years from now, whatever it was, right? And I know that many of you out there, myself included, had this very same thought. What is the judge going to think? What if they do allow my kid to have a voice? Is my kid going to say that they want to live with the alienating parent? And is that going to weigh on the judge's mind? Is the judge going to look at me different? All of those things, right? You cannot control that regardless. You can't. And if you focus and worry on that alone, it will keep you completely debilitated. Back to my client. So the other thing he was worried about, and I know that many, this is a very common thing for us as target parents. The idea was that maybe he, by exercising his parenting time, that he was putting his son through too much, that he was contributing to the pressure that his son might be feeling. I know we all have gone through or had very similar thoughts to this, and you want to save them the suffering, the pressure. You don't want to be another source of contention or obligation for them when they're already going through so much. And again, I'm not going to hand out any blanket advice on this, but I will say this. In the case with my client, he was thinking about bowing out. Maybe he was being selfish. I'm kind of paraphrasing what he said and probably just assuming some other stuff. I told him that regardless, he was basing his decision to parent his child on the way that somebody else was behaving in his son's life. And so basically he's acting as the enabler to the alienating parent. Does that make sense? Like, because of whatever somebody else is doing, now he's having to try to act, not act, go around and save his child the pain that his child is going to be feeling anyway. Because as we know, alienating parents are typically of some sort of disordered personality type, right? And will manipulate those around them to serve them in the way that they feel that they need to be served. So if it's not about the target parent, it's going to be about something else. This child is going to be feeling pressure regardless. And I don't mean to sound so lackadaisical about that or so matter of fact about that, but it is the reality of what's happening. So I was telling my former client, he can either be a father in his child's life, and separately, his son feels pressure from the alienating parent, or he can choose to not be a father in his son's life, and his son will still feel pressure from the alienating parent. Either way, the kid's going to feel the pressure. Removing himself from the situation isn't going to change the fact that mom or alienating parent is manipulating, coercing, pressuring him in order to serve her own needs. She's going to do how she do. It's not going to change. So now in the end, do you want to find ways, create ways to be present in your child's life or not? This gentleman, my client, he is blessed with opportunities to be able to exercise his parenting time. And I know for him, that is what he truly wants right now. Some parents out there I know are not open to going back in that, and that is fine for you. I don't think that there is a right choice or a wrong choice here, but I think for each of us, for each of you, just do yourself the favor of asking the high quality questions so that you can come to the high quality answer. that's what so many of us, of you, you're coming from a place of scarcity or fear. And so you're trying to do damage control instead of coming from a place of empowerment and advocating and doing the most loving thing for everybody involved. If you act coming from your higher thinking and more focus on who you want to be, how you want to show up at each and every crossroad, as opposed to how they might react in the end because of whatever decision you make, when you try to be strategic like that, you'll notice that you're constantly like on edge and feeling like you have to manipulate the situation in order to work to your benefit. And you will never be happy. You will always be on a chase. It is one of the worst feelings in the world to feel like you're constantly having to like check the wind to see which way you go, which decision you make. Parents like us, because there's so much stress, we freeze and we don't make any decisions from that place. And that can really fuck with us because then we end up feeling like stuck, broken. We don't trust the decisions that we do make. And so it creates this whole other dynamic within ourselves. We feel like we're not equipped to make the best decision possible. We start looking outside of ourselves to other people to make our decisions for us when we really truly are the only ones who actually know what's best for our situations. Nobody else knows it better than you. You are the expert in your life. You hear me say that all the time, but I truly mean it. And when we're basing our decisions on what we think we want an outcome to be in the end, I think we oftentimes will sell ourselves short because we're working so hard to create this one outcome. And what if something better comes along? What if you can't even think about how amazing something could turn out if you were just patient with it? You just never know. Now, that isn't to say that you don't set goals, because goal setting is 100% worth it and a smart thing to do. But that's a whole different episode. And I think I shared my feelings on that with you. Goal setting is about really who you become and the choices that you make in the process to attaining said goal. Attaining the goal in the end is just whatever. It's the way that that goal pushes you to think and act outside of your comfort zone while you're on your way to it. So anyway, my point of this whole episode is, number one, trust that you do know what's best for you. And that if you're acting from a place of fear, or if you're acting in reaction to something and trying to protect yourself out of desperation or urgency, the chances of you regretting that decision later are high, you know? But when you are asking yourself high quality questions about options you have in front of you, and are you even considering all the options? Are there other options? Make sure the questions you're asking are worthy of you. You know, how are you feeling? Are you feeling rushed? Are you trying to avoid something? Are you trying to manipulate somebody else or the actions that somebody else takes? Are you doing it in order, like, what I mean is not that you're doing it in a sinister way, but are you acting in like fawn mode and doing things in order to appease and so that it might make a more desirable outcome for you? And if that's the case, then let me just tell you that you will get to that place and the outcome will not mean shit to you. So instead of basing whether or not something is a successful venture, whether that's reunification therapy or deciding to show up at your daughter or son's graduation this year, are you making that decision coming from like your highest place? Are you not wanting to go because you don't want to make waves for your kiddo? In that case, I would offer that you reconsider and ask yourself some better questions. Because later on down the road, that's one of those decisions that you might regret. If the only reason that you're choosing to not go to graduation is so that you save them the possibility of pressure or feeling uncomfortable. Again, every situation is different, right? But when you're making that decision based on trying to avoid an emotion for yourself or for somebody else, then I would just urge you to up level, because you want to be always look back on your life and the choices that you made, knowing that you acted as the most courageous, that the decisions you made considering all the options and were made from a mindful place. When you look back on any decision you've made in the past and you were considering everything, everybody involved, then I guarantee you those decisions that you made from that higher thinking place, there's no regrets there. Even if there were adverse consequences afterwards, because you have learned something in the process. And there will be mistakes, but those were just things that you learned from then. They're not regret worthy. When you're doing your literal best in the moment and being mindful and taking all the things into consideration, then how can you kick yourself? So it's just a matter of coming from a place of empowerment or not. And if you're scared of what the judge might say, of what your ex or your kid, how they might react, if you live your life trying to get in the heads of all the other people, you will miss out on the life that you are supposed to live for you. Okay? So that's what I have for you. Okay. You guys, April 27th, which is this Saturday, is the live event. It's an hour and a half. I have it set for an hour and a half. You have to register, though, because if not, you won't be able to get the Zoom link to your mailbox in order to go. Okay. So if you want to attend, then go register. Now, it is beyondtheHighRoad.com/neutralize my pain. The N, the M, and the P are capitalized. I didn't think that that would make a difference, but I tested it the other day and it sure as heck does. So capital N, neutralize, capital M, my, capital P, P. So sign up for that for this weekend, April 27th at 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And that is all.
Thanks so much for listening today. If you like what you're hearing and you'd like to hear more, please make sure to click subscribe wherever you're listening or watching. Also, for bite-sized clips and tips, be sure to find me on TikTok or Instagram. See you next week.